Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike 2099, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slaggy McWaggy 2.
Actually, it's Ultra Slag and Ultra Wag. Thank you very much.
Welcome once again, each and every one of our lovely and beautiful listener, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
Today is May 10th, 2026, and this is GameBuoy Podcast episode 193. We all live in a Pokemon world. Pokemon Pokopia Side A. As this is a Side A discussion, I want to use this opportunity to remind you that our discussion topic, Nintendo and Koei Tecmo's surprise hit collaboration Pokopia, will be covered in the B-side episode to this show, found wherever you found this episode, and wherever else fine podcasts are found, probably about a week after this episode has gone live. In the meantime, we'll be here with you today for most of the rest of our usual assortment of segments, news bits, and follow-ups. So that's what we have on deck here today, but before that, let's get started, relax, and talk about some games news. Slaggy, what is the way that we rhyme?
Well, unfortunately, the way that we rhyme is price increases. Because we have the official confirmation that the Nintendo Switch 2 is going to be getting a price increase in many regions. The Japanese price increase will go into effect on May 25th, with the US, Canada, and Europe getting their price increases on September 1st. Nintendo has cited changes in market conditions, and after considering the global business outlook, that unfortunately they have to raise these prices. In Japan, the price of the Switch 2 will be increasing from 49,980 yen to 59,980 yen, which is a 10,000 yen increase, which is approximately Nintendo 64 US dollars as of recording. In the U.S. and Canada, it is getting a $50 increase. Here in the U.S., it is increasing from $449 to $499. In Canada, from $629 to $679, which interestingly is only about 37 U.S. dollars. And in Europe, it is increasing by 30 euros from 469 euros to 499 euros, which is only about actually 35 euros. So we don't have the most expensive increase here. That would be Japan in terms of exchange rates, but LOL, global economy, what? Nintendo actually issued a statement when they were announcing all this saying, "We sincerely apologize for the impact these price revisions may have had on our customers and stakeholders, and we deeply appreciate your understanding." And I'm like, girl, it's not your fault. You're not the one who messed up the global economy. Grumble, grumble. It does sound like they really are trying to double down on the software lineup, specifically saying, "We will prepare a robust software lineup to enhance the Switch 2 ownership value. We will work diligently to overcome this barrier."
Yeah. For me, I'm hoping that statement sort of implies that Nintendo is, you know, sort of getting ready to bring the thunder software wise to sort of make a statement, you know, sort of prove that the Switch 2 is sort of worth it. For me, I have to say, you know, these increases to me feel pretty minor compared to the increases we've seen Sony and Microsoft apply.
Yeah.
I feel pretty similar to you. Like, the global economy is not Nintendo's fault. I've seen a lot of people saying, you know, "Oh, I hope Nintendo fails. They're already so money grubbing." You're allowed to feel that way, but I just don't have that same feeling. We've seen a lot of talk about this generation out of Nintendo about the wider spectrum of pricing options that they're taking. And we're actually, you know, continuing to see where they're releasing some of their larger marquee titles at lower prices for the digital version. So like the upcoming Yoshi game is like $10 cheaper on digital, for example. We talked about that previously. I don't know. To me, it really feels like Nintendo is doing their best to meet the moment and to have a fair exchange in value with their customers. I can appreciate that others don't feel that way truly, but that is the genuine sense I have, is that Nintendo is trying to like keep their head afloat and have a fair exchange of a good quality game to their consumer for a what they see as a fair price. I understand, you know, games have been devalued a lot. There's a lot of questions about, you know, what the value of a game should be. I respect all of these questions. I think they're important questions. I just really think it's very interesting that people come at Nintendo with a lot of these very specific, like parasitic and almost predatory accusations, when it's like they're doing the smallest increases and doing the most to make software available at a wide variety of price points. Although I will say, you know, technically Microsoft has also done that second thing. So I don't know. I just feel like the conversations about Nintendo continue to get unfairly skewed when, you know, it really feels like they dragged their heels on this for as long as they could. We've been talking about this talking point and Nintendo eventually having to do this for like 6 months.
We thought it was going to happen before launch.
Yeah, right. So I don't know. When I take the whole thing into consideration, I think it really sucks for everybody involved. I think it is the fault of the, I'm going to say global economy, but hopefully people understand what I really mean by that. And go from there with that. I hope that Nintendo does prepare a robust software lineup that makes all of us feel good about our continued ownership of Switch 2s. I feel like that's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah.
Perfect. Then, on a somewhat related talking point that also sort of ties in this episode's discussion, which again will be really happening next episode, we have word here that Nintendo is announcing, or has announced, a new Switch 2 bundle. This is going to be releasing initially in Australia and New Zealand, although I have seen folks hoping that this bundle gets released in other territories. This is a Nintendo Switch 2 bundle with Pokemon Pokopia. Of course, this follows alongside some of the other console bundles we've seen, probably most notably the Mario Kart World bundle, which shared a similar announced pricing. I think that this is very cool. I know that people have bought Pokopia, or have bought Switch 2s to play Pokopia. I don't think Nintendo was expecting this to be a system seller, but this is probably the best indication yet that they were sort of caught with their pants down, but hoping to meet the moment. I was a little bummed about the lack of a Pokopia specific design on the console. Right. Dock. Saigi, what were your thoughts on this one?
Exactly the same. Like, I would have been pretty tempted if it had like a really cute Pokopia dock or something. But yeah, like, I know people who have not made the jump to Switch 2 yet, but really would like to play Pokopia. So I think that, like, even just specifically in my circle of folks, that this would sell systems here.
Yeah, absolutely. Strong agree. I think they should be releasing this bundle in every region they're selling.
I assume it would be, like, what, $549?
At this point, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, you know, honestly, that is probably the only reason it hasn't happened in the rest of the world yet, right? If they weren't dealing with this hardware price shuffle, they'd probably be working on the bundles already.
True.
All right. We also have just kind of a pair of interesting stories I'm going to tie together here and plow through real quick. We sort of have Microsoft beginning some really interesting backtracking. This is word that Asha Sharma, you know, we have seen repeated statements come out of Xbox that basically they're not going to be turning Xbox into, you know, an AI sub department, despite, you know, Asha Sharma having an AI background. Instead, Asha Sharma continues to make statements about, you know, Microsoft's need to win back fans, about their need to prioritize, you know, like player growth. I think the most interesting thing, though, and this sort of comes from the second news story, we're going to link both of you these news stories on, these are over on Kotaku. We will link you over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
As a reminder, of course, over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
You can find the episode guide to the current episode you are listening to, as well as our previous episodes. This should have all of the links to the pieces we are discussing, and we link you to them both so that you can follow along at home, as well as to credit all of the people doing the hard work upon which we do this. That having been said, this second piece here from Kotaku is about how Microsoft is killing the Copilot AI for Xbox initiative. And this is, again, you know, a word out of Asha Sharma was that this tool, which was pretty broadly unpopular, no longer aligns with the Xbox platform's mission. I really have to say, while I am still very hesitant, because, you know, they still do have been talking about how there are goals for AI and LLM models in the gaming space, it really sounds like, at least on a consumer-facing level, that they've got the note that people don't want AI. As far as I'm concerned, any backtracking on the AI that we see is a good thing, and moving in the direction of catering toward what gamers actually want, rather than Microsoft trying to tell us what we want. I'm still not sold on the new Xbox initiative. I'm not sold on Microsoft. I think that there's a whole lot of problems with Microsoft. However, I also believe it's a nuanced situation, and I am happy to see them moving in directions that seem positive on the face of it. I am hoping for more stories like this in the future.
Indeed.
All right, let's see. Rounding out our big three, I think you had a news story for us.
Yeah, you keep giving me all of the bummer news stories, girl. What's with that? That should be a doom and gloom, I think. I'm just kidding, though. We have news from Sony after their recent financial results have been released for the past fiscal year. They are predicting a decrease in PS5 sales due to the memory drought, which is caused by generative AI. And as a result, their need to increase pricing on their hardware, as you mentioned. And on a similar note, during their annual corporate strategy and earnings call, they discussed that they have not decided when the PS6 will release or how much it will cost, and even made an allusion to the fact that they might change business models in response to the memory crisis, whatever that means.
Yeah, so the reason why we wanted to talk about these three stories are that basically all three of the big three, so to speak, are kind of really struggling with this modern moment and the different ways in which the AI market bubble and over-reliance of the economic markets worldwide on the AI market bubble are really having a lot of knock-on negative effects on all three of these companies in myriad ways. And I think it's really valuable to look at that and again, you know, just be cognizant of what's happening.
Right.
That having been said, I'll take the note, and hopefully your next story will be better. Until we get there, though, I have a news story for us. It looks like, according to a statement that came out of Yuji Horii's mouth on a live stream, this was the Koso Koso broadcast, he indicated that they will be doing a new live stream on May 27th, and that he thinks he'll be able to make an announcement about the next game. He also said we'll have various other things besides the next game, so please look forward to it. So everybody's pretty much looking with excitement in their hearts for May 27th for the hopeful reveal of the next big Dragon Quest game. It's worth noting, we've been waiting for the official big reveal of Dragon Quest XII, The Flames of Fate, for literally years now. It would be nice if it was finally the moment.
Or he could just keep talking about AI and how much he loves it, And then it would be a Kuso Kuso broadcast.
Let's see here. In a little bit of a follow-up, the Nacon Connect event that had been previously delayed did occur. We got a couple of interesting announcements. The two that really popped up on our radar that we're going to talk about. First, here is word of the upcoming Werewolf the Apocalypse Rageborn. This is going to be a top-down action RPG, but very specifically in the with like a Metroidvania world map style, where they, you know, really talk about bringing specifically like a Metroidvania design ethos to the exploration and even some of the combat, in terms of, you know, needing specific skills to do specific things. I tend to enjoy that kind of game design. I tend to enjoy Werewolf as a setting. So I, you know, tentatively will be checking this one out. We also got word that the, is it fair to have called it a surprise hit? Either way, the well-received game from last year, Hell Is Us, which had released in September of 2025 on PS5, Xbox Series, and PC, is getting a Switch 2 port this upcoming September 24th. This was a well-received action RPG. My recollection is it has some Soulsy adjacent features with the combat and stuff. But mostly, like I said, what I really recall of it is it being really well-received. So I think this is great news for anyone who's interested in playing it and hasn't had the opportunity yet.
Excellent. We have a release window for Stranger Than Heaven, which is the upcoming game from RGG Studio. This was revealed during an Xbox Presents presentation that was dedicated entirely to the upcoming game. And although we obviously do not have a specific date yet, they did say it will be releasing this winter. I guess they're probably waiting to see if GTA 6 gets delayed again. We also got the reveal that the theme song was done by Snoop Dogg and Tori Kelly alongside Japanese artists Satoshi Fujihara and Ado. They also all have voices in the game. I am not really a fan of the headliner of that theme song for certain recent statements, but that's fun, I guess.
Yeah, I feel you. My sense, personally, is that he's sort of a little more middle of the road, opportunistically taking the coins where he'll get them. But, like, maybe that's worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. On happier news, we got a surprise Nintendo Direct on the 6th. So just a couple of days ago, this was on Wednesday, in the middle of the day, Nintendo basically was like, oh, hey, guys, in about 10 minutes, we're doing a Nintendo Direct. Be sure to tune in. So I was like out at the Apple store picking up a laptop of mine that I was getting repaired. And so I had no idea that this was coming. I just get home from the Apple store and people are messaging me about Star Fox. I'm like, what the literal fuck are you talking about? I load up this Direct and lo and behold, we have like what looks like a pretty meaningful remake of Mario 64. It looks
Mario 64
or Mario 64, Star Fox 64. It has, you know, like new graphics, new art style, new gameplay modes, but otherwise appears to be pretty closely built on top of the original game with the original enemy layouts and everything all intact. All the timing patterns appear to be intact. For me, the absolute ideal best case scenario probably would have been a brand new Star Fox game made in this style. My second best case scenario for a Star Fox announcement is basically this. The other exciting thing, you know, this was announced on May 6th and it's releasing June 25th. So just what, like 7 weeks in between the announcement and the release of a fairly major title. Albeit one that, again, will be cheaper digitally than physically as well. I am just over the moon excited about this announcement, you know, because it mirrors the original release so closely, you can even still use like an N64 controller with it. Even though they will also have like new control modes, including like a Joy-Con 2 mouse control thing. I think everything they're doing is so quiche. I'm really excited. What are your thoughts?
I'm surprised this story is not in so controversial, because some people seem to be very upset with the character designs, specifically that Fox McCloud and his fellow cast members are not fuckable enough.
Ah!
No, seriously, that was the Star Fox discourse, like, for at least a day.
Well, I saw a lot of discourse about this game, about two major talking points, and that was probably the biggest talking point, was people who were really disappointed about these new character designs. The other discourse which I saw about it, and one which I at least think has a little more meat on the bone, is that, you know, technically speaking, Nintendo has remade Star Fox 64 before. And then, you know, they did Star Fox Zero, which they closely patterned off Star Fox or older Star Fox games, including 64. So, like, I've seen a lot of people wishing Nintendo would go to a different well for inspiration. And it's, I get it. But the flip is, I think we've seen a real pattern of this type of release here in the Switch era, where you know, Nintendo gets a team ready to make like a new game in a series by having them remake an older game. That is my expectation here. I think if this release does well, I think it is a certainty that we will get a new Star Fox game. That having been said, if this release isn't for you, let go of the FOMO and just don't get it. I saw people talking about how Pragmata recently reached a new sales milestone, and I saw people I respect, even like Games Journos, talking about it's only doing all these sales because the word of mouth is so strong, people are experiencing FOMO. I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? This is literally the point of strong word of mouth. Like, it's a game people like that was unexpected, and they're sharing their enthusiasm about it. This is literally your job as a games journal, my guy. If you didn't like the game, talk about that, of course. But otherwise, like, it just sounds like you're complaining about something being popular unexpectedly that you didn't have, you know, money on that horse being popular, so to speak. Like, come on. If you're into this new Star Fox game, which I am, be excited. Let's check it out. If you're not excited for it, that is also okay, but maybe move on.
Yeah, like, I have not had a lot of Star Fox experience in my day, so I hope they'll do, like, a Star Fox test flight or something, because similar to Pragmata, like, I would not have even probably looked into it too much if they hadn't had that demo, the sketchbook, so...
You know, I almost think they will, because they've been doing so many demos and test flight type experiences. But I also think that, you know, they talked about adding new difficulty modes, an easy mode for newcomers and a more difficult mode for people who have played the original game. So, like, to me, it sounds like they are making concessions for people who have not had Star Fox experiences to sort of make this an easier onboarding experience. And I think that's a good thing. That's how you grow a franchise.
Excellent.
We also had the exciting news here that following that surprise direct, Nintendo actually updated the Nintendo Music app with a special release of 10 tracks from the upcoming Star Fox Switch 2 game. I personally think this is really cool. You know, it's new recordings of some classic songs. Also, it's just kind of a cool way for them to hype their upcoming release that I don't think costs them very much. It's just very, very Nintendo, and I think very cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, with all of that having been done and all of that having been said, we have a few more release updates. For me, probably the most exciting one, actually, is word that I accidentally just closed my browser window. That wasn't cool.
Ooh.
Word that Mina the Hollower, This is, of course, the new game by the folks who made Shovel Knight, Yacht Club Games. That's finally going to be releasing on May 29th after having missed its previously intended Halloween release. I've been looking forward to this one for years. Slaggy, what do you think?
Yes, girl. It's about to be Mouse Girl Summer.
Ah, it sure is. Let's see. We also got word that the River City Saga, this is the newest game in the River City Saga subseries, Journey to the West, is heading west, appropriately enough, on June 4th. After the last time we talked about this game, I ended up looking at one of the earlier and cheaper iterations on the eShop. I picked up one of them for, I think it was like $9, and it was basically Kunio Kun and Friends in Sengoku period. It was honestly it's pretty cute stuff. So definitely one that I'll probably keep checking out. We also have word here, and this is one I'm really excited about. Coldacept the First is going to be getting a release in the Saturn Tribute series. This is going to be launching worldwide on July 30th for PC, and then September 8th on PS5, Xbox Series, and Switch in the West. We also got word that Steins Gate Reboot will be releasing on August 20th. And last but certainly not least, with regard to our regular release updates, is confirmation, as the scrolls foretold, that is to say the leaks, that Star Wars Galactic Racer will be releasing on October 6th.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you, Ella.
We also got some retro release updates for you. Over the last 2 weeks, the Console Archives series, let's see, on April 30th, saw the release of Roga Armored Force. This was the PS1 game by Data East from 1996. This was also known as Wolffang and is presently available under that name on the eShop as a Saturn Tribute series release. I think this is really awesome. Both because I think Console Archives actually technically offers better emulation than Saturn Tribute Series does, but also, as I noted in our wishlist episode, I actually want alternate versions of stuff like this to be available. I see that as a positive. So if you have fond memories of this PS1 version, you'll be able to get that. If you have fond memories of the Saturn version, you can get that. If you're just chasing best emulation, you know, you can go for that. I just feel like the more options we as consumers have, the better. So,
If you're Captain Spike, you'll get both.
Oh, girl, that was such a read, because I do already have Wolffang and I do already have Roga now.
I'm not judging.
I appreciate that. The Arcade Archives release for that day was Cyber Commando. This was a 1994 Namco release. This was cool. This was the sequel to like Cyber Sled, or if not a direct sequel, then like a sister game, like with the same setting and fiction and stuff. It was like one of the big sit down cabinets with like the big chunky plastic seat that would vibrate and rumble with the speakers in it. I love that we continue to get these early 3D arcade games from Namco that had been deluxe cabinets in the arcades. We very rarely used to see that stuff get ported. So to finally have home releases of some of these titles is, to me, just really incredible.
Yeah.
Then for May 7th, Console Archives got Mag Max. This was a Famicom / NES release by Nichibutsu. This was from 1986. That same day, we got the Arcade Archives release of Arkanoid.
Oh,
this
shit.
This is, of course, the Taito classic from 86. Between Console Archives and Arcade Archives, Hamster is really doing the work of bringing the titles I want to see week to week. It's good stuff, and most of these titles I find I'm picking up, at some often to the exclusion of new releases. With all of that having been done, and all of that having been said, though, Slaggy, I think it's time for you to take us to the club.
Well, how about to the cinema? Because that's where Sekiro No Defeat is going to be for 3 weeks starting on September 4th. This, of course, is the anime based on Sekiro's Shadows Die Twice. The article that we are linking to on Anime News Network that you can find on our show notes on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Didn't seem to specify what this theatrical version is. My understanding is that it is an anime series, and that I presume that this would be like the first four episodes or whatever.
Yeah, that's become kind of a big way for various anime studios to promo their new seasons, I've found. Like, Dandadan did it, Bleach is doing it, I feel like Boku no Hero did it. Like, a lot of these, like, big Shonen Jump franchises are doing that. So I'm not surprised to hear, if they're trying to make Sekiro a big thing, that they're doing it for that, too.
Nice. One thing that was great is that in the past, the animation studio, QZilla, had gone on record saying that no AI was used in the production of Sekiro No Defeat. So we love that.
Heck yeah.
And I recall these games are pretty tough, if I'm correct.
Yeah, yeah. It's Souls stuff.
Yeah, it's From Software, right?
Yeah.
So this might be a way for me to enjoy that world, because those games I appreciate From Software, they are not for me.
Yeah. Oh, man, I wish it was like the old days. I would have you just come through and like, okay, just chillax on that couch. We're going to get some Sonic and I'll just play through this game so you can see all the settings and see all the cool stuff people are talking about online.
I mean, you say Sonic, but it would have to be Japanese food because of Sekiro.
Honestly, fair.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move the show forward. We have word here. This is one I've referenced previously. We're very excited to note Capcom announced last week, specifically Thursday, that Pragmata has now crossed the 2 million units sold worldwide milestone. I haven't bought it yet. I am planning to. I did dabble with the demo and thought it was honestly pretty novel. Like, it seems pretty cute. I'm into what they're serving. I understand why people are digging it. I think the strong word of mouth is really cool. I don't know. I think this is a good thing. I think this is good news. The fact that some people that I respect treated it kind of trepidatiously had me like, what's going on here? Then we also had the cute news that the Pac-Man franchise is going to be getting a series of animated shorts on the official Pac-Man YouTube channel. This is going to be starting on May 22nd, Pac-Man Day, and new episodes will premiere every month thereafter. I think that's cute. I didn't know the world needed a new Pac-Man animated series, but honestly, as long as it's cute and better than the one from the 80s, I'm into it.
That's a pretty low bar to have to pass.
You ain't kidding, man. What you got for us?
So Square Enix put out a new trailer for the upcoming Switch 2 and Xbox Series releases of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And in that trailer, it revealed that a demo is available in which your save data will transfer over to the main game when it releases on June 3rd for those consoles as well as on PC. We always love a demo that lets you carry over your save data.
Yeah, we really do. I end up downloading demos a lot. And then the ones that have save data carryover, I end up buying these games so frequently just because it's like, well, I've already started, might as well continue.
LOL.
Right. All right. Well, and I mean, I say that like, as long as I enjoyed the game, I'm not doing that with games I didn't have fun with.
Like, ew, this game sucks. I'm going to buy it.
Ugh, I hate this, but I've got to finish it. Anyway, we've got word here that the legendary design legend and director at Nintendo, Takashi Tezuka-san, is retiring after more than 40 years. Yeah. This man was a designer on the original Super Mario Brothers in 85. He started working at Nintendo as a part-timer when he was still at university in 84. He directed, like, original Zelda, Link to the Past, Mario World, and Yoshi's Island. He was still involved as producer or in, you know, like a supervisory capacity, even on recent releases like Wonder, 3D World, Breath of the Wild. So he's been a mainstay for decades at Nintendo and has been, you know, a major contributor to all of the major franchises that we all love. So this is notable. I will say I'm still really optimistic about Nintendo's output, even in these series, because as we've talked, you know, they've worked really hard on engineering a changing of the guard, right? Like Nintendo has really worked to ensure that they have a new generation of designers that have learned at the hands of, in this case, Tezuka-san and also Miyamoto-san and just all of the greats. That having been said, this is, you know, a warning sign. We're all getting older and, you know, some of the superstars of the game space are getting up there in age.
Yeah, it's a changing of the guards.
Indeed. Do you have any thoughts?
Just thank you for all your contributions, Tezuka-san. Legend.
Absolutely. We also had word here of a free update for Resident Evil Requiem. This is going to add a Leon Must Die Forever mode. This is to add like sort of a ongoing roguelike mini game. The patch, as I understand it, is actually already live, right? And it's, from what I understand, somewhat adjacent to the way that the Blood Hunt mode works in Marvel's Rivals, to give it a touchstone point that you and I can sort of talk on, Slaggy.
Right.
In terms of, you know, you're going to like go through, you're going to kill these mobs, you're going to get new abilities or new stats as you're going. And there's some cumulative stats that are going to build up, so your additional runs will be more powerful. I enjoy these kinds of modes. I understand why developers are adding them, because I think it's probably a pretty efficient way to reuse assets. And I'm always here for free mini games being added to people's purchases they've already made. Anything to say to that, Slaggy, or do you think this sucks?
No, I think that's cool. I enjoy a good horde mode.
Awesome. Then what do you got for me?
Yeah, so this one was really interesting, and I think really a testament to the reason we have the Culture Club segment. So this one is
actually
about...
It literally is. Yeah. We'll talk about this a little more in the future, maybe, I think. But the goal of Culture Club is literally to like sort of meet that intersection of games culture and larger culture. And here we are.
Yeah, so this has to do with the studio behind EVE Online. You know, even if you've never played it, such as I have not, if you're a gamer of a certain age, which we are, you're most likely at least familiar with CCP, the studio behind EVE Online. I literally only learned from this article that they're actually called Crowd Control Productions, or should I say they were, because apparently there has been some confusion, and they even describe it as brand collision between the studio and the Chinese Communist Party, which in the English language is referred to as the CCP. Obviously, that's not the name in China, or like the initialism, or even in Iceland, where the company formerly known as Crowd Control Protections, not Productions, my bad, see, like... Yeah, I don't think anyone ever called it that. It's like literally just CCP. Anyway, they have changed their name.
I have only ever heard them called CCP.
Now you're going to have to call them Fenris Creations. This change is coming along with their parting of ways with their now former parent company, Pearl Abyss. They are now an indie studio again, so we wish you the best, Fenris Creations, with your new name and independence.
Indeed.
We also got some news that is nothing to do with communist parties, as far as I know. I mean, maybe Team Rocket a little bit. This is the news that Fire Red and Leaf Green, the Switch 2 releases, sold over 4 million units over a 6-week period. There was a little bit of talk about the price tag being possibly a little exorbitant, and some people a little bit upset that the profanity filter was put in place. So, you know, you can't name your rival dickhead, or you can't name your parasect dickhead, you know, because he's a mushroom. Anyway, this didn't seem to deter people, including myself.
I will say I noticed the filter. Like, I thought it sucked, but it's like, okay, we just have to be more creative. Necessity is the mother of invention. Instead of naming him dickhead, now you name him Shroomhead.
True.
Mushroom cat.
Yeah, right. This kind of makes me feel like I probably should get back to my Fire Red and play through at some point. I'm, like, literally still sitting in Fuchsia City. Hopefully this is good news, because I would dip again for, like, a Heart Gold Soul Silver. Like, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I would like to see them continue this release style, even if it means I am basically advocating for another release pillar of Pokemon. But even as they continue remaking and doing new games, I do still find value in revisiting the old ones. Particularly when they have promised Pokemon Home support, it's like, okay, if I can carry these babies forward, especially, I get such a kick out of revisiting these older games.
Yeah, I mean, my big wish list is Pokemon Stars. Like, just do it.
All right, well, we also have word here of a new added mode to Halo Infinite. Basically, a few months ago, we got what was supposed to be the final major update to Halo Infinite. Then we just got out of Halo Studios the Firefight Gauntlet. It has been described by fans and developers as deviously difficult. I think this is really very cool. It's, you know, you add a super hard horde mode to the game as a final gift after you're supposedly done with updates. In a world where we are fighting to have games kept alive, I actually think that's a pretty cool little gift to your community. So to me, you know, a little bit hats off, and they definitely bought from me a little bit of goodwill, even if I only played Halo Infinite for a relatively minor amount of time.
Excellent.
Then we also got the very, very cool news, and this is also the type of stuff that I like to talk about here on Culture Club, word that Double Fine has become the most recent studio under Microsoft's banners to form a union.
Yeah.
They are specifically the 14th of the various gaming teams at Microsoft to unionize. And I just have to say, I think that's really awesome. We are very pro-union here on the show, and we support you. We think this is awesome. We celebrate Double Fine, and we will continue to do so.
Yeah.
I dare say I have more better to say about Double Fine than I do Microsoft.
Indeed. What do you have to say about Idaho?
I don't know. Let's go there.
You're living in your own private Idaho. Living in your own private Idaho.
All right, first up is the announcement of the return of the Maiden's Rhapsody event to Final Fantasy XIV. They are saying this is in honor of Final Fantasy XI's 24th anniversary. I kind of think maybe it's a tie-in to the fact that we've had the Vanadiel raid series in the Dawn Trail expansion. For whatever the reason is, I mean, 24th anniversary kind of seems like a silly number to celebrate. That being said, it features the character Iroha from the Rhapsody of Vanadiel expansion. And if you complete the event, you will get an armor set that looks just like hers. I personally think it's a great armor set. I used it for my samurai glamour in the past for quite a while. And something that I always forget is that if you've already played through it, as I have, there's a feature that they have called Seasonal Event Replay feature that lets you replay it, of course, without the rewards. But if you really wanted to experience the little quest line again, you have the option to do that. It's kind of almost like a new game plus for some of these seasonal events. This event first appeared back in 2015. It does come back every 2 to 3 years. So, you know, if you have not yet played it and you're not currently playing, don't worry about the FOMO. They do seem to cycle this one around along with some of the ones like the Dragon Quest one and the Final Fantasy 15 one. I wish that they would bring back like the Lightning Returns one, but they added those gear rewards to the cash shop. So it's doubtful that that one, and I think there was another one that got added. I think it was a something with Shantotto as well. I think she was like in a fate and you could get a wind up Shantotto.
Oh,
and I think she's in the, I think she's in the cash shop too at this point. So
gross. I have to say, yeah. I really don't love the over-reliance on cash shops in these games, and I would much rather see them always having one of the events active and like, oh, that event is now done? Okay, well, now this event is done, and like, or now this event is going, and always have one of the collab events going. I don't know, like, there are so many of them, I just feel like, why not always have something available to players, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, at least at this point, aside from some of those very early ones, they have been bringing them back, like the Yo-Kai Watch one. And so,
yeah, big credit that they did bring that back. I had been waiting for years, and I really, big ups to them.
Yeah, girl, I hadn't done it the first time around, so I had to like, I chose to grind out all of those weapons in 1 month, basically, that they were doing that. So LOL. Speaking of bringing back some things that have been around in the past a couple of times, we have the announcement from NIS America that they will be releasing The Legend of Hero Trails from The Legend of Heroes Trails from Zero and The Legend of Heroes Trails to Azure for Nintendo Switch 2 and PlayStation 5 this fall. They will feature improved performance, 4K resolution, and upscaled textures. Plus, mouse support on the Switch 2. This is pretty cool. You know, these games originally were released on the PSP about 15-ish years ago and then got PS Vita releases after that a couple years later. They got PS4 releases just a few years ago. So this is kind of like the fourth time around for some of these games, but it sounds like they are some nice improvements. So that is good news for fans of these games, which seems like there are a lot of them. I probably should get around to a Trails game at some point.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I have been saying that for a while, and then I started playing Trails First Remake a couple months ago, and I was like, this feels really familiar. And then I was like, wait, I played this on PSP like a decade ago.
LOL.
Right? So, but it is, no, it's good stuff. It's never been easier to get into the series. In fact, a lot of the various titles in the series that are available on eShop seem to go on sale pretty frequently. So I think it's worth looking into if you're interested in classic JRPGs that also do some interesting modern stuff.
Nice.
Let's see. We got word out of Type Moon that they are developing a new 2D fighter in the Melty Blood series.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is Melty Blood Twi Lumina. It is expected to release in early 2027, and it is one that we will likely continue talking about moving forward.
Yeah, I feel like we haven't heard the name Melty Blood in quite a while.
Yeah, it's at least been a minute. We also have word here, this comes out of Sony Interactive and Arc System Works, of two new characters coming to Tokon Fighting Souls. This is, of course, the upcoming Marvel 4v4 tag fighting game coming out in August. And the two newcomers to the Fighting Avengers team are Hulk, and this appears to be like a Planet Hulk aesthetic Hulk,
and, yeah, Daddy.
And Black Panther, which is a iteration of Black Panther that appears to be Shuri inside of the costume.
Yeah.
One of the more traditional male Black Panthers. I think this is cool as hell. I'm really excited for this game. And the more characters they announce, the more excited I get, because they continue to lean into unexpected designs and aesthetics. And that's what I want out of this.
Yeah. I'm just excited about Hulk in a harness. I guess next we need Scotty in a Speedo.
Ah, fingers crossed.
And Genie in a bikini.
Speaking of fighting games, and it feels a little unfair to go from such a beautiful looking game as Marvel Tokon and then to talk about Avatar Legends, the fighting game. But I have to say, we got a new trailer. This is teasing the new playable character. This is going to be Sokka, who obviously is a fan favorite.
Yes.
This game is going to be releasing July 2nd. The thing for me is that it really does look like you can tell that this is a 2D fighting game that has been made on a budget, but that's fine. You can also tell they have people on staff who understand fighting games and are putting together what really looks like a solid little 2D fighter. Based on the gameplay they have shown, I'm really cautiously optimistic about this one. It really looks like they're doing the best to make a respectful, fun little Avatar 2D fighting game.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah. Then what else do we have?
Yeah, so this one was an interesting one. I mean, I guess we kind of knew it was coming, but I had been so out of the loop because this has to do with Civ 7. And, you know, Civ 7 was not a flop, but it was not super well received upon its release. So this update is coming called Test of Time. It is coming on May 19th, so not much longer after you listen to this upon the release of this episode. If you were listening to this later or like years in the future, obviously, you know, that already happened, unless it didn't. But assuming the world doesn't come to an end and, you know, Gandhi doesn't decide to nuke us all, when the Test of Time releases, you'll be able to play as one civilization throughout the entire game, which sounds like, yeah, it's Civilization, right? But the thing with Civ 7 is that as the game currently is, as it goes to a new age, you are forced to switch to a different civilization. That option will still be in the game, but now you are no longer forced to do that.
I have to say, it feels like such an oversight that it wasn't an option in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting concept. Did I say concept? I think I did. Oh, dear. It's an interesting concept, but, you know, that's not what we're used to, you know? And I mean,
well, the thing to me is, like, I understand the thinking that, like, oh, people will just stick with what they're used to, so we have to change it and make it so you have to change. But to me, it's like, no, girl, just incentivize switching in such a way that I am more inclined to do so for the incentives that it gives me. Not,
yeah,
you have to do this.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting idea because, like, you know, civilizations have rises and falls. So, like, I actually think, in theory, it's like a really clever idea. They've also overhauled the victory conditions and added a new system called Triumphs. This will provide bonuses for completing challenging objectives. You know, I picked up Civ 2 on the Switch.
Civ 7.
Did I say Civ 2?
You oh, did, boy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's before my time. I came into the series with Civ 5. I picked up Civ 7 for the Switch shortly before the Switch 2 release so that I could take advantage of the Switch 2 upgrade, which I think was either inexpensive or free. But with the price of the Switch version, like, it ended up being a really good deal. I was not really feeling it at all. It might be worth checking out, though. So we'll have to see. We also had word that the CEO of Take-Two, Strauss Zelnick, has said that he personally takes responsibility for the game's failure, saying, "We got it wrong. What we tried to do was a bridge too far." Yeah, we like accountability.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where, like, the proof will be in the pudding if they actually take the note or not. But I appreciate the fact that he put out such a statement that actually did acknowledge some of the problems. Like, the fact that it actually acknowledges some of the problems that the release version of the game has makes me think there's reason to be optimistic.
Yeah.
The funny thing about that is it's all been a long time meme that you don't play a Civ game until its expansions are done anyway. So, like,
true.
if this game does come together by, you know, they release the second expansion, presumably Test of Time would have been its first expansion. Now it's just a major free update. I presume they will still try to do an expansion. If we look at it within the typical Civ cycle, if that update brings it, you know, into being, you know, a Civ game really worth playing, it's just the Civ cycle all over again. It's honestly kind of funny to me.
Yeah. I guess that means that it's probably time to check out Civ 6 again.
Ah, exactly right. That's so funny.
Which I remember at the time, Civ 6 was kind of like, eh, let's just go back and play Civ 5. But, like, honestly, it might be worth checking out again. But probably just going to go back to Civ 5 because it's the GOAT.
It's so funny because even as you said that, I'm like, okay, but girl, I could go for Civ 5 right now.
Well, we've got an episode to finish, but maybe after.
All right, well, then let's keep moving forward. First, we have an exciting story for those of you that played Diablo 4. With the announcement of Lord of Hatred, the secret cow level has been uncovered.
Yay! Now,
it has, of course, been somewhat controversial, with many longtime fans of the series trolling and saying that the new cow level needs more cows or that the cows need to say moo more. That having been said, for me as a longtime fan of the secret cow level as a concept altogether, I'm delighted by this, and this is probably the most I've ever considered playing Diablo 4.
LOL.
And then another one I was really excited about, this is word that Atari has acquired rights to the first 5 Wizardry games. This is, of course, Wizardry, Proving Grounds of the Mad Overlord, 2, The Knight of Diamonds, 3, Legacy of Lilgamon, Wizardry 4, The Return of Wyrdna, and Wizardry 5, Heart of the Maelstrom. As well as many other Wizardry-related video games, contract rights, and other related intellectual property, which I'm assuming means various ports to some of these games, because, you know, many of these games have had ports to various consoles and what have you. Some of these games even have modern remakes that, at least prior to this announcement, have been available on modern eShops.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right? Still, regardless, to me, it is exciting that we will be getting new remasters, collections, and other new releases of these titles. I am a big fan of them. I know for sure I have a modern release of Proving Grounds of the Mad Overlord on Switch because I was just playing it a few nights ago.
Oh, cool.
I would be very happy to see more modern releases of any of these other titles should they, you know, get to them.
Yeah, if my memory serves me correctly, these kind of were, like, along with things like Ultima, like, basically the reason we have, like, Dragon Quest, Final Fantasy, Shin Megami Tensei, like, basically...
Yeah, Wizardry is very foundational dungeon crawly.
Excellent.
In particular to, I think, influential to some of those Shin Megami Tensei-type stuff.
Yeah. Because
that series also started dabbling in that type of gameplay experience. Anyway... All of this having been done and all of this having been said, we talked about some things that got a little controversial. So let's move on to things that are so controversial.
Controversial.
Oh my God.
All right. So there's this new game, I guess, that I had never heard of until now. It's a new open world hack and slash game called NTE, Neverness to Everness. Okay. So it looks like it's very like anime aesthetic, etc. But the thing that puts it in so controversial is it's been accused of using in-game assets that appear to be AI generated. In particular, there was a fake trailer for what seemed to be a parody of Makoto Shinkai's film Weathering with You. There are also some in-game locations that, although not necessarily plagiarizing, maybe, are very reminiscent of locations that are well-known from Doraemon, Crayon Shin-chan, and Initial D. The developers, Hulta Studio, did issue a statement saying, "The character stories and world you experience are the work of artists, writers, and designers. AI-assisted tools were used only on a small number of background and environmental assets, not on the characters or stories that define this game. Well, sorry, but I've never heard of this game, and now it's defined by your use of AI-assisted tools. Bloop.
Yeah.
What about you? Any non-AI news?
Not at the moment, unfortunately. Yeah, we have word here that the CEO over at PlayStation, Hideki Nishino-san, apparently used a long portion of his recent Sony earnings presentation remarks to make a case for AI and how it could benefit gaming and the company's bottom line. Yeah, repeatedly choosing to embrace AI at every level, while claiming that we believe AI will unleash the creativity of our studios, power a more curated platform, and enhance the PlayStation experience for both players and creators. While noting that he would like to see AI tools incorporated everywhere from the PSN store itself into even the ways that Naughty Dog and Guerrilla Games are rendering their characters' individual hairs. Yeah. And in fact, according to his statement, they claim that their tools are already in use at Naughty Dog, San Diego Studios, and other Sony studios, and that their tools were already used in released titles like the recently released Horizon Zero Dawn remaster, which me means I'm not going to touch that fucking thing, by the way. Yeah, this to me, major bummer. And in fact, we have like a follow-up news story here. The first news story had been Kotaku talking about this PlayStation boss's opening remarks. Games Radar then did a follow-up article about the same statements, but specifically focused on the Horizon Zero Dawn remaster, as well as the Naughty Dog and San Diego Studios using these AI animation tools. They're bragging, of course, that animation work that would have taken hours can now be completed in a fraction of a second, which, if you don't care about, you know, the human element of art, is fine. I tend to prefer when humans make the art I'm going to make. I'm generally not interested in consuming things that humans couldn't take the time to create. But we all have different values and thoughts and opinions. And I just would really strongly encourage you out there in internet radio land to live by your values with regard to this stuff. If you're not into AI, avoid the games that were created using AI. Even if people say it's inevitable, even if they say, oh, all games are going to be AI someday. Well, not old games. Start playing old games. Not indie games that are explicitly handmade. Play indie games that are explicitly handmade. Don't give in just because other people want you to. No.
How has Microsoft got a better perspective on AI than Sony does at this point?
Effing right.
If Microsoft, takes a stance on their geopolitical involvement and steps it up there, I might be a Project Helix adopter and not a PS6 at this rate.
Oh, right. Well,
maybe it's just all Switch 2.
I could actually see myself, with the way things are going, staying mostly in the PC space for my gaming, because I really am not a fan of Microsoft right now, and the stuff Sony's saying is really quite repugnant to me.
Yeah. At least I can play Final Fantasy 14 on anything.
Right. This is a kind of controversial one. I personally am okay with it, and I will explain why, but let me first detail the situation. During the recent live stream for Stranger Than Heaven, which we've already talked about here today, they also discussed how this is going to have a character who is portrayed by the actor Bunta Sugawara-san. Sugawara-san passed away in 2014, but had been an iconic actor in many, many films and franchises. For me, I'm actually familiar with him because of his ties to Ultraman and Kamen Rider, but he was also in the wildly successful Battle Without Honor and Humanity film series that, in fact, kind of popularized Yakuza film in general and was a huge stylistic inspiration to the Ryuga Gotoku games altogether.
Oh.
So to me, there's no AI here. They're using character like or actor likeness with full consent and permission from the family. It is a period specific game where, you know, some of this stuff is taking place when this actor was still alive and was performing roles similar to these types of characters. To me, the closest thing to this was back when Capcom was doing very similar with the Onimusha games, and they were patterning characters in the Onimusha games after various actors, some alive and some dead, all of them notable to various genres. I think probably in the Western world, most notable is that I think Onimusha 3 had Jean Reno in it, which was obviously pretty funny. And obviously he's handsome as hell. But
yeah,
right. But to me, as long as everything's on the up and up, you know, they have proper permission. They're not using AI fuckery. In this case, in fact, the character whose face likeness is being made to look like Bunta, he's also being, or to Sugawara-san, I should say, rather than being so disrespectful as to refer to him by his first name, the character voice is also being performed by an actor who was personally associated with Sugawara-san. So again, to me, this is just a really fairly respectful way to include an icon of the genre in a game that is itself, as a series, largely homage to the genre. Do you have any thoughts?
I mean, like, does One Piece have to stop using Sakazuki-san, who was also based on his likeness?
Yeah, that's my exact thing, right? I actually feel like this sort of thing is somewhat common in modern Japanese media, where you're, you know, paying your respects and doing homage. And I really strongly feel like as long as you're doing it through the proper channels, I don't see the problem.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that the estate, I mean, obviously he can't speak for himself. He has passed. But I mean, you know, if his estate says it's okay, then, you know, that just opens up a bigger thing than, you know, that's a bigger discussion than the specific thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like it is being done with the intention of honoring his legacy and not like, oh, we're going to make a holographic musician to cash in on them.
Yeah, I think that's the thing for me, is that it just seems so respectful and like honoring him that it's a positive. I view his inclusion as a positive, and it makes me more excited about the game.
Yeah, and the Kotaku comment section is like, why are people mad?
I will say, like, though, I have seen people on other forums talking about it being really gross and distasteful and, oh, this makes me not want the game. And honestly, that's perfectly fair. I respect that. That's not how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, one of the major tenets or pillars of our show. You know, I don't necessarily think everyone needs to agree with us, as long as we're not talking about, you know, the fundamental sanctity and basic respect of another person's personhood. Otherwise, I think we all can and should have our own opinions, you know, influenced and informed by our own views. Hopefully, when we talk about our views, even if you don't agree with them, you can take something from them to think about.
Indeed. And speaking of something to think about, Blizzard has added a housing exterior to their cash shop. You know, we've talked a little bit about Cash Shop earlier with some of that Final Fantasy XIV stuff. This is a housing exterior for their, you know, new housing that they just added. It's a lovely treehouse. It's giving very, like, Teldrassil vibes, very Night Elf, Eleganza. The thing is that this costs 4,000 hearth steel, which is equivalent to $40 real U.S. monies. Yeah, and I, like, you know, I don't want to, like, I would like to say that I would never pay $40 for a player housing skin, but, you know, if it was in Final Fantasy XIV and, like, it was a really cool one, it's like, make your house look like, I don't know, Seventh Heaven from Final
Taco
Fantasy
Bell Cantina.
VII. Well, I mean, shit, Taco Bell Cantina. I would pay $100 for that. No, because you could just build a Taco Bell Cantina in Pokemon Pokopia. So, yeah, like, I mean, $40 for a housing skin does seem a little bit exorbitant. Especially, yeah, I don't know, like, microtransactions in general. Like, have we ever done a microtransaction episode? I feel like maybe we should.
Sort of, but it might be time to take a look back, if not, because, yeah, I mean, the whole economy of the games industry is changing. I mean, it's always in flux, but there's this whole focus right now on nickel and diming you in games you're already have paid for, and in some cases are actively also paying a subscription for. And it's just really frustrating to me, especially in cases like this. It's like, this is such a cool treehouse, but why isn't this an in-game reward? Why isn't this tied to, being a night elf faction reward or something? Like,
even if it's like, oh, you have to have a night elf to unlock it, but then once you unlock it, it's account wide.
Yeah.
And if you really want your orc to have a lovely little treehouse, because why do orcs have to be all zug-zug? They can have a nice treehouse too. To be fair, my understanding is that this is not restricted to Alliance only. Oh, actually, no. Looking at it, it does say that. I'm looking at the base ones. They're like complaining about the horde ones in the base game. So the fact that if you want one that's pretty, that you gotta spill money for it.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly what I mean. Like, you should have so many options available through gameplay before you even think about adding a cash shop one. To me, cash shop one should be like after the players have possible rewards up the freaking wazoo, and then you use the cash shop ones for designs that are like wildly outside the aesthetic of the game. I really dislike this modern trend, and Final Fantasy actually really gets me with this, where they'll take like a popular outfits from various story NPCs and then sell those on the cash shop. And it's like, what? This data is in the game. This is a main part of the story. This should be a story quest reward. What are you talking about? Pay you $12 for this. What?
Well, I think that cost probably had to go to make it fit over those Rogan and titties.
Right. I hate that shit. Now, I mean, and it's, I try to make my peace with it, and I try to, these developers have to make their games profitable so they can keep going. I get it. I feel like there has to be a different I also, I've bought a couple of these like $20 mounts off the shop when they are unique assets that are also seem like they had a high level of effort put into them, and it's like my birthday or something. I've given myself a treat, but just $40 for a player housing skin, really something about that. And I don't feel like it's my place to say, because I'm not a WoW player, but it just feels like extortion. If I were a current WoW player, I'd be upset about this.
Yeah.
All right. Well, and then the last one of the controversial news stories we wanted to buoy here was word that, and honestly, all I really need to read is the headline. It says the whole freaking controversy.
Oh, no.
Per Kotaku, EA sets a new $8 billion sales record just months after laying off Battlefield 6 developers. I mean, it says it all, right? Like, we have EA out here literally setting records while also laying off huge amounts of staff is not a good thing. I think this has appropriately brought down the vibes. Unless you have anything to add, I think it's time to move on.
Meh.
Doom and gloom.
Yeah.
All right, so our first doom and gloom, this is never fun to talk about. This is the news that the Paris-based studio Spiders, which is owned by Nacon, probably best known for Greedfall, they are shutting down after 18 years of operation. The upcoming DLC for Greedfall, The Dying World, will still be released by Nacon, but then, in the words of Spiders, after that, well, that's it.
Yeah, I think that's this really sucks. Yeah. I know there are people who are playing Greedfall and enjoying it, although obviously not as many people as they would have liked. Given that we know the Nacon stuff that's going on, obviously this isn't a huge surprise, but it still definitely super sucks. My heart and thoughts go out to all of the people who will be impacted by this. Hopefully the DLC still turns out well. And I don't know, hopefully it has some kind of positive ripple knock-on effect for everyone.
Yeah. Also, the fact that they're like, well, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay, like, I hope that we keep doing Game Buoy for, like, another 30 years or whatever, but on our last episode, we should be like, well, that's it.
Well, that's it. All right, clock it. We also have word here that the recently released Sakuna of Rice and Ruin mobile game. This is Sakuna Hinuka Junreitan. Is going to be shutting down after only 5 months of being available on Android and Apple iOS devices. This released in February of 26. It had been planned for a worldwide and PC release. Obviously, those things never came about and have been canceled. The final day of operation will be July 27th. I think this sucks. I don't personally know anyone who is playing it, but I do know multiple people who were hoping that it would eventually come out here. I mean, this really sucks, and I hope it doesn't make it harder for them to get more Sakuna stuff made, should they be inspired to do so in the future, because that first game was a little instant classic.
Yeah, these mobile games just seem to not be sustainable.
Yeah, for real. It seems like a lot of these publishers chased a dragon that was not good for them.
And speaking of chasing, imagine chasing a dragon.
Ah! So this is an update that Last Flag, this was a new Capture the Flag online-only competitive multiplayer shooter made from a studio co-created by the lead singer of Imagine Dragons, is not going to be getting any additional update past the next update. This game was available for 3 weeks, and they are ending development. It is worth noting they will not be shutting the game down. It will stay alive, and you know, they are hoping that more people come through and play the game and enjoy it. It's just that they are going to have to move on to another game and hopefully find profits there. I think this sucks. Obviously, you know, they wanted this game to work out. I'm not necessarily surprised it didn't, simply because of how saturated the market is right now. But the Imagine Dragon guys are, like, surprisingly solid dudes. So I was hoping that this would go well, and it just kind of sucks that it didn't. That having been said, the fact that they are making sure the game is still going to be, like, a playable game that people can continue playing if they enjoyed it, to me is a huge positive. And I hope people do check it out. I don't know that I will, but other people.
Yeah.
What do you have for us?
This is one that you will probably be bummed about, because I know you like horror games and horror movies. And this is the announcement that the Paranormal Activity game that was in development, which is Paranormal Activity Threshold, has been canceled. This news came from the developer Brian Clark, who was probably best known for the 2022 Mortician Simulator game, The Mortuary Assistant. You know, he was in charge of this game, and he wanted to have some more time to polish the game, but Paramount refused. So rather than put out a subpar product, Clark and the publisher Dread XP just chose to part ways with Paramount, and the game is canceled.
You know what? Fuck yeah, Brian Clark. I think that is great. He basically recognized that the game wasn't where it needed to be to release, and rather than put it out to make money and exploit his audience. He chose not to let that happen. I think that's awesome. It makes me like him even more. And I am yet again this year side-eyeing Paramount.
Yeah.
Let's see. We have word here that Sony filed a $765 million impairment loss last year.
Oh, no.
Citing the underperformance of Bungie as a major contributing factor in their recent fiscal report.
Oh, no.
I mean, the good thing is that, you know, the way they cited it as an impairment loss obviously indicates that they feel that Bungie was worth less than the expected monies that they made. However, this isn't exactly yet a sign that Bungie is out the door. Like, there are other ways they would have filed this if that was what was going to happen. If anything, this makes me think that Sony is hoping things turn around for Bungie. This makes me think that Sony is hoping that they can, you know, record in the black for next year. And to that end, we did get some word out of Bungie, you know, that they do not have their next specific story points and, you know, next steps all quite planned out yet. They're not all locked in their own words, but they do in fact have ideas and plans for what they're going to be doing for the next several years for the Marathon game. So while many of us are concerned, and in fact, I watch Marathon videos almost every day now, I really want to play this game. I'm just really hesitant to buy into a live service game. I really wish it had a free-to-play option. I have to say, seeing things like this, you know, between the two, between the way that Sony is reporting this loss, between Bungie saying they have plans for the next few years, I am cautiously optimistic that they are not going to abandon Marathon, but there have been lots of things in the game space that looked like sure deals over the last decade that have fallen apart, so I don't know anything anymore. Could I at least get a good discount on Marathon, please? I'd love to check it out.
Maybe.
All right. Well, all of this done and all of this said, let's move forward to, I think, our last news segment of the day today. Let's talk about some gossip, some rumor mongering, and any and all manner of hearsay with Rumor Has It.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
Yeah, this first rumor comes from the VR YouTuber Brad Lynch, who has found shipping records that indicate that some gaming-related products are arriving on cargo ships from China. This might not be a big deal, but these are game consoles that are arriving at Valve warehouses. So these might be an indication that Steam machines and or Steam frames are on American soil as we speak. And, you know, Steam does say that they're still planning for a 2026 release of Steam Machine, the way things are going with other consoles and other hardware manufacturers and their certain things, a Steam Machine is looking more and more appealing.
Yeah, right. I think this is really notable because, if you may recall, back during the Switch 2 hullabaloo, one of the first indications we had that Nintendo really was flooding the market was that we had some of these shipping manifests that had indicated that they had brought over tons of hardware. And this is now a very similar situation of Valve, you know, sort of being caught importing hardware. To me, this very much feels like a where there's smoke, there's fire on them getting the actual hardware in. If they're getting it in May 26, I can't imagine they want that sitting in warehouses for years, because that costs money, you know. Ergo, I think you're right. I think there are reasons to believe that they are really trying to make this 2026 release happen for one or both of the hardwares.
And girl, I was looking at the Steam Machine, like, landing page on the Steam storefront just a little before we recorded, and like, I guess they're going to have little faceplates for the front of the Steam machine, and one of them is like a wood grain one. Like, girl, like, I almost want it just for that, for like it being a nice piece of furniture. I love the wood grain aesthetic. Like, it's giving very like Atari for real.
Yeah. Honestly, really, the more we talk about the negatives of Sony and Microsoft, and the more positives that start looking to be in place for the PC market, I am increasingly starting to consider a Steam machine for, our living room TV, and foregoing the next gen consoles, at least initially, and maybe seeing if a Steam machine can't carry me through that initial period until an eventual Switch 3 someday.
Yeah.
All right. We also have word here, and this is kind of interesting. We're talking about it here because this is hearsay. This was not stated in any official capacity. It's technically a little closer to a rumor. I think this is more likely to be true than not, and thus worth talking about. This is word that Reggie Fils-Aimé, during a recent lecture at New York University, said that the whole kerfuffle with Nintendo not selling on Amazon was basically because Reggie got a call from an Amazon executive asking them to basically give them like a sweetheart deal so that they could outprice even Walmart, and Walmart is literally cited. And I guess Reggie gave the executive a hard time that, like, literally what you're asking me for is illegal and we can't do that. And so Nintendo pulled out of Amazon for asking them to do illegal marketplace interference and giving them, illegally low, explicitly financial support so that they could outprice their competitors, and specifically Walmart. Obviously, in the modern moment, the modern day, everything going on, this is a nothing burger. It's not that meaningful. But on another hand, to me, this is a megaton. It explains a lot about the Nintendo and Amazon schism we saw years back. And it makes me wonder, frankly, about what manufacturers are giving Amazon these illegal sweetheart deals. I think it's worth thinking about. Slaggy, what were your thoughts on this revelation?
I was gagged.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a lot of respect for Reggie, though, for standing on business and being like, no, we're going to do this correctly. For real. I really appreciate that. And then we got one of my favorite kinds of leaks, although, it is the typically reliable when we get information this way. Still have to technically note it is a rumor. This is word that the Pan-European Game Information Board has rated Tales of Eternia Remastered. The rating was published on April 16th, and this strongly suggests that Tales of Eternia, or Tales of Destiny 2, as it was originally known in North America, is likely to be getting a upcoming remaster, which is exciting for those of us who are now into Tales, but kind of were less so, 25 years ago.
And what is that PEGI rating?
PEGI 12.
I was hoping you would say like PEGI 12. Yeah, that's why I was asking you.
Very good.
PEGI 12. PEGI 12. PEGI 12 would be a great European drag queen name.
Like, it would.
Like, if I was a drag queen in Europe who was like a nerd themed gamer, PEGI 12 would be great. Not PEGI related, but in a similar vein, the Taiwan Digital Game Rating Committee, which does not have an iconic PEGI 12 sort of voice that I'm aware of, they have rated a Switch 2 version of Dragon Quest XI's Echoes of an Elusive Age Definitive Edition. Probably not super surprising, but we have this rating, which looks like it is PG-15. So, these rating boards announcements, not really announcements, but these ratings boards' ratings seem to usually be pretty reliable signs that these are happening.
Yeah. Well, and I have to say, I would love a Switch 2 version of Dragon Quest XI Switch, because that was already, like, it was an incredible version of the game. They downported it from PS4/5, so it did have a softer image, but, like, some of the, like, and they made, like, some slight world adjustments to, like, the geometry so that it would fit on the Switch 2 platform and, you know, reduce some of the, like, foliage in the out in the world and what have you. My hope is that this version both increases that the resolution so that it's a little bit less of a soft image and hopefully also restores some of that geometry. But honestly, as long as it does one of those two things, I think this is awesome. This is exactly what I hope third parties do. As far as I'm concerned, there are entire catalogs of software that I would be happy to revisit with Switch 2 updates. So many third parties right now have the opportunity to take a bite at Nintendo's evergreen apple, and all you have to do is push a resolution patch that you're pricing for less than $5. It's not that hard right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, unless you have anything else to add.
Nope.
All right, let's start winding down by talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
All right, let's see. First of all, I'm going to talk about Pocopia. I didn't really play too much Pocopia. I did, however, log in to do the Sableye event. You know, I say that I did the Sableye event. I went to one Dream Island. I collected a red rock, but before that, I took a picture of it. And then when I went home, I just printed like 50 more red rocks and broke them all to get all of the red rock pebbles or whatever that I needed to get all of the event shop goods on day one.
LOL.
So, yeah. I like Pocopia a lot, but as you can probably tell per that anecdote, I'm at the point where I've, like, mastered my economy so much and stuff that it's, like, very easy now to achieve all of my goals very quickly. And because I tend to be a goal-motivated player, it is a little challenging when I'm not actively, like, building a cool build or whatever. That having been said, I still think it was one of the most incredible games I've played in the last 12 months, and it is definitely something we'll be talking about during the GOTYs this year.
Absolutely.
What about you?
Yeah, so I was very similar for Pocopia. It has taken a bit of a backseat over the past few weeks. I did also make sure to start the Sableye event. Sableye is one of my faves. I am a little bummed that you can't get them on a cloud island by default, because I really went all in on my cloud island. I guess you would just have to do a 3D printer of the specific items to have him move in. I guess that's how that works for these event Pokemon. I haven't even thought about how to get the Hoppip family on my cloud island yet, so I presume that's the way you do it. But you know, I did set up a little environment for him to move into, and the items all look really cute. I've mostly been going on to go on Dream Islands. In the main game, I'm trying to get Raikou, who's the last legendary dog/cat, legendary beasts, I guess is what they're usually called, right? And on my Cloud Island, I'm trying to get more ice, because it is very hard to find, and there's a certain building that you need ice to build. You know the one. I've had no luck with either of those. Womp womp. Like, my Dream Islands have been...
Have you gone to a Clefairy Dream Island?
I have, and, like, just the ones that I've gotten have, like, really shitty caves.
That's genuinely wild to me, because I did one Clefairy...
Oh my god, wait, no, maybe I was going... I think I was going to the Eevee Dream Islands. I don't know why I thought it was Eevee, so that's maybe my bad. Oops.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, because I literally just did that. In fact, in this past week, it was just such a kind of minor thing that I didn't think to mention it. But that was, in fact, one of the things I did on the same Dream Island visit I was doing the Sableye stuff on.
Oh, yeah. I think for whatever reason, I had been going to Eevee Islands. And yeah, that absolutely does not have ice. I'm like, why are all these caves so shitty?
Ah, right. I mean, I only found like 50, but it was enough to achieve my goal. So
I mean, I only need like 10 at the most. So like, that's why I've been like, really, not even a little ice as a treat?
Ah, the only context in which we're going to talk about ice positively in 2026.
Oh, no. What else have you been playing? Borderlands 2?
Ah, no. Let's see. So actually, I'm going to talk about these out of order. For May the 4th, I wanted to indulge in some Star Wars fun, but I didn't want to like spend money. So I decided to just play the Switch version of Knights of the Old Republic on Switch 2. I will also say they did get a sale out of me because I bought the Switch version of Knights of the Old Republic 2 on Switch because I've been having so much fun with it. My understanding had been that these ports were in need of a lot of work. But then I read up on it, and it sounds like in their current state, they run pretty solid. To that degree, or to that end, I should say, I have been playing the Switch port of Knights of the Old Republic on my Switch 2. I am now past Taurus, so I've done the first planet. I'm in the Jedi training phase of the game. I've only had one game crash. And of the many times, I say many, this is like my fourth time playing KOTOR, that is the fewest amounts of system crashes I've ever had in KOTOR up to this point.
Oh, wow.
Like when I played it originally on my original Xbox, I crashed on Taurus. I crashed in the Undercity. I crashed in the Upper City. I crashed in the apartments. Like it did not run that solid. So I'm actually really having a true blast. It isn't a completely bug-free experience, but as far as Knights of the Old Republic goes, it's honestly going about the best it's ever gone on a technical level. And that has freed me up to actually do something I've always heard of doing, but have never done. And that is, I saved all of my level ups, except for the one level up you have to do during the tutorial. And then otherwise, I didn't level up at all on Taurus. I over-relied on my companions to get me through every combat, relied on various, you know, min-maxed point assignments to get through every conversation. But I did it. And what this allows is once you get to the Jedi training stuff, you get to apply all of your XP and get all of your level ups in your Jedi class rather than in your pre-Jedi class. Yeah, right? Because you only get 20 levels throughout the game in total. So usually you'll end up with like, I have, you know, eight levels up in Scout and then 12 in Jedi. I'm going to have 2 in Scout and 18 in Jedi. So that's going to be awesome. And it is, in fact, already quite awesome because I'm level 8. I got to level 8 as soon as I got to be Jedi. It is so baller to already have so many force points assigned and stuff, and to have already been able to spec into all of my various Jedi abilities I want. And like, I already just walk up to stuff with a lightsaber and just tear it apart. It is so awesome. I'm so happy. I've always heard that playing the game this way is a lot of fun if you like the overpower fantasy, which I do. Now that I've done it, I want more. In fact, even just talking about it, I'm like, I'm probably going to play more tonight after this. We're done recording. That and Final Fantasy really have been my big games, but I'll get to that. What about you? What else have you been playing?
Well, speaking of Final Fantasy, you know, my personal life has been a little hectic lately. So I have been enjoying my favorite gaming comfort food, which is the critically acclaimed MMORPG, Final Fantasy XIV. You know, we had just talked about the FanFest announcements, and so I think, you know, I had been logging in to, you know, mostly do my retainers and, you know, maybe queue up for PvP, but I hadn't really been playing for, like, a couple of months, like 2 months or so, maybe. That being said, since our last recording, they did drop patch 7.5 I did the new dungeon, which was pretty cool. I did the new trial, which was pretty cool. The dungeon's actually tougher for me, LOL. I have several many thoughts, all of which are spoilerific, about how some of the story threads, you know, they had said that it was going to set up the 8.0 content, and I have some major thoughts and wonderings about that I am not even going to say off air, because I don't believe you have wrapped up that MSQ yet. What I will say, though, is that I also did the third Alliance raid in the, I almost said the Evilly series, that was back in Stormblood, the Vanadiel series, which is Winders the Third Walk. I realized after recording last episode that I said, oh, I'm looking forward to the Sandoria raid. That was the second one, which has been out. So I meant to say Winders. It's very enjoyable. There's a certain mechanic that one of the fights have that I really enjoy. I don't want to spoil it for people who like to, you know, experience these things and be surprised by mechanics. So I enjoyed it a lot. I think it was a good raid series. I'm trying to gradually progress through the PvP series pass. You know, I did not finish it last time, and I'm not trying to fall into FOMO. That's, you know, one of my gaming resolutions for this year, but the fact that I am playing regularly and most nights a week I'm going in to do my frontline roulette, and the fact that 7.5 is going to last a little bit longer means I'm confident I will finish that pass no problem. And, you know, they've been really good about, thankfully, not putting that stuff on the cash shop. They put it up for PvP currency reward, the trophy crystals. So, like, after a period of time, you can, you know, go back in, buy those, or rather exchange your trophy crystals for some of those old minions and mounts and stuff. So I actually did that. I got some emotes. I saw you were in the Wolf's Den pier as well, getting some emotes, I think, as well. So yeah, I like the way that they set it up, but I do anticipate I will be able to finish it no problem this time. What about you?
I have also been playing Final Fantasy XIV, and I had to do everything I could not to, like, talk over you or, like, be additive while you were talking, just because that's not how we do this specific segment. And there are reasons for that. That having been said, I came back to 14 in a big way after the the FanFest stuff that we talked about last week or last episode. When it was going on, you know, we recorded the episode, FanFest was still going on. And so I was in, like, the heat of that excitement. That excitement has persisted. I have been playing every day. I've been doing dailies. I've been doing cosmic exploration. I actually finished the newest planet, Oasis, on Miner. I got the vast majority of the rewards already. I believe I have all the mounts, but I still might need, like, a minion and one of the Orchestrions or something. I'm largely done with botany. I just have to finish my last level up. Then I have to do Fisher. So, you know, I'm having a good time. I've started progress on the next Phantom Weapon grind, but it is a grind, so I'm not, like, pushing it hard. I'm just letting it happen as I do stuff. And that approach is going pretty well so far. I have been doing my PvP dailies and having so much fun doing PvP. The actual changes, so, like, where people don't lose battle high now, it ends up making for, like, really high power matches, and the end game ends up being really thrilling in my experience. I'm actually getting my leveling closer to done, which is really fascinating to me. I have, like, 4 more classes to level, and then I'll be done with experience for the expansion.
Oh, wow.
That's not ever been a project for me. I do dailies and I do level things, like, just because I'm goal oriented, as I've noted many times, and because I like getting the tokens to trade in for, you know, materia and other turn ins to then trade in for, you know, on the auction house or whatever. The knock on effect is, though, I only have a couple more classes to level. So, yeah, wow, it's been really surprising as I've started ticking them off, and I'll probably tick off a Pictomancer pretty quick, too. So I've been working on the 7.4 MSQ mostly, And now I just like the last cutscene quest to turn in on that. And I'm going to probably do that tonight. And then I'll get to the current MSQ patch stuff in the next couple of days. So you'll be able to talk to me about your spoilers pretty soon. I am really excited to see this content and see this story stuff, though. I will say the 7.4 stuff has had me on the edge of my seat at times, and I've been really into it. I really enjoy doing the Doom Train trial.
Yes.
Right? So
good.
Yeah, just good times all around. I'm having a blast with Final Fantasy. I'm glad for the time I took away, but I'm glad I'm back.
Glad to have you back.
Did you play anything else, or do I roll into my last?
Go ahead and roll and roll and roll. And...
All right, well then, this would be Vampire Crawlers! I still cannot really put it down. It is going to be in the GOTY discussion for the show for sure. That having been said, I have finished all of the official unlocks. So until they add more content, I am technically done. Though there is also kind of a small handful of like non-official unlocks that I haven't seen yet. So like poking away at that little side stuff, but to the best of the community's awareness, it's all just Easter egg stuff, not official unlock ticky box stuff. I have really, really enjoyed the late/post-game of Vampire Crawlers. You get to start modifying the individual rarities of the various modification gems that the gameplay hinges upon. And so once you unlock that mechanic at basically the end game, it really changes the whole approach to how the game functions. And in a very positive way, because the whole point of this game is to put, you know, player control of your deck in player hands. So the more control you have over that, and the more of the randomness you can control and even lock out over time, you know, the more you're going to get your desired outcome. I'm having a real blast. And now that I have set up this like rarity combination where I'm like always getting the cards I need and always getting the gems I need, I'm really excited for them now to put out like super hard modes so that I can challenge and test my meta builds, so to speak. So yeah, just really exciting stuff, and very much the kind of stuff I like to sink my teeth into.
Nice.
Thank you. And with that, I believe it is time for our exit lewd. Slaggy, would you like to get us going?
Yeah. So we love your feedback. We love your subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. If you want to follow us on the social medias, you can find us on Blue Sky at GameBuoy.org with an actual dot.
At GameBuoy.org with an actual dot.
On Mastodon at GameBuoy at MSTDN.games.
On Mastodon at GameBuoy at MSTDN.games.
And you can email us at gamebuoy.org@gmail.com with the .org spelled D-O-T-O-R-G.
Gamebuoy.org@gmail.com with the .org spelled D-O-T-O-R-G.
And if you hadn't figured it out at this point, our home base is gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org.
Where we post all episodes and their show notes, all the way dating back to the year 2012, A Simpler Time. And please let us know if there's anywhere else that we should be putting Game Buoy. The podcasting landscape has changed a lot in the last couple of years, so we'd love to know where you'd like us to go.
All right, with that having been said, I'd like to start shouting out to our friends of Buoy.
If you're friends with Buoy, then you're friends with me. If you're down with Buoy, then you're down with me.
As ever and always, I'd like to point you firstly in the direction of OLR2DX, where every geek has a voice, our friends and inspirations. Please join us in looking forward to the new Orange Lounge Radio 2DX Odyssey. I'd also like to point you in the direction of Aftermath. In their own words, Aftermath is an independent, worker-owned website about video games, other media, and internet culture. In my words, they're the audience-supported, hint, hint, site that many of our faves have landed at. We cite them all the damn time, and we strongly encourage you to check them out, as well as support them if you like what they do. I'd be remiss not to mention Game Mechanics, where they kick the tires and run diagnostics on tabletop experiences. Hosts Logan Jenkins and friend of the show Greg Leatherman have been playing games for decades and have designed and released several games themselves. Please check them out. I'm also a big fan of Walloping Web Snappers, a Spider-Man podcast. Doug and Derek dive into every Spider-Man cartoon ever made, from the swingin' 60s through the rockin' 90s to Spectacular Ultimate and beyond. And last, but definitely not least, unless we're talking about individual episode runtimes, I suppose, we've got Neo Geo Go, where Aaron and Andre take on the Neo Geo library chronologically and quickly. I have to tell you, I'm a big fan of the Neo Geo. I'm a big fan of quick shows. I'm a big fan of what Neo Geo Go is doing. That having been said, I'm a big fan of all of the shows we mention. Slaggy, who would you like to mention?
I am a big fan and supporter of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, a weekly internet radio show and podcast discussing the latest news in gaming, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. Bobby is, of course, one of the founders of the Voice of Geek Network, VOG Network for short, of which we are proud to be a member. I'd like to also steer you in the direction of the Nintendo Pal Block podcast. One of the hosts over there is good friend of the show, Eddie V, where they dive into the week that was, into the world of Nintendo, a world that I quite enjoy, if you didn't notice that. I'd also like to point you in the direction of Standard Issue Computing, which is a Blue Sky account and a blog. Longtime friend of the show, of course. It's your source for retro and modern computer games, hardware, software, and history. And, you know, he's done a lot of spinoffs like World of Warcraft focused and comics focused. So I just support everything that dude does. Great dude, great content. Go support. I also encourage you to check out Sasha's Retro Bytes on Blue Sky for bytes of vintage gaming, including magazine scans and photographs. One of my favorite Blue Sky accounts to follow. I'd also be remiss not to point you in the direction of Defunct Games, your daily source for modern video game reviews, exciting trivia competitions, and old school magazine analysis. Love those old school magazines. And last but certainly not least, I would like to point you in the direction of Thomas Game Docs on YouTube, where each video covers a different aspect of video game history, such as game development and sound design for beloved Nintendo franchises. In fact, before Nintendo had a chance to put up those Star Fox, she had put up some like sound rips from the Japanese site, which had some of that music. So definitely go check out Thomas Game Docs. And last but certainly not least, well, I guess not last, but our wonderful theme music was done by the late, great Zelda Reorchestrated, which is the project that reorchestrated beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. A symphony of the goddess, you could say. That was a Zelda thing, right? Well, yes. thankfully, you don't have to pour a 40 into the Great Fairy Fountain, because the legend continues in the form of ZREO Second Quest, which you can go check out and show your support today at zreosq.com. It's quite lovely. And speaking of lovely, my final shout out, as everyone always, is to my hot robot boyfriend, Craig, who is our robotic recording engineer. Without him, Game Buoy would not be possible in the modern era. So definitely check out Craig and his evil twin, G-Arc, if you're nasty, for your disco recording needs.
Did you say disco recording needs?
No, I said Discord recording needs.
Oh, well, in the coming days, we're cooking up something for Mother's Day, which, in fact, is today. Happy Mother's Day, all you mothers out there.
Mothers.
Stay tuned. Please.
Oh, there's a B-side. There's a B-side coming up, as we mentioned, right?
Yeah, we will also, in the coming days, have a discussion topic to go alongside this episode. We will be talking about Pocopia, our experiences with the game, our thoughts on the story, and our hopes for the future. So,
and which Pokemon are our husbands? I have two of them.
So please look forward to that. But until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
Stay safe.
Stay safe.
Stay strong.
Stay strong.
And I want to take the ultimate step. Find the courage to be bold.
Pokemon.
To risk it all and not forget.
The lessons that I hold.
damn, girl, there we go with a 2-hour episode.
That just means that if this had been one episode, that it would have been 4.
Well, that is true. Okay, that is true. However, I am happy to have a 2-hour episode in the books.
Indeed.
It is true that the B-side will probably be another 90 minutes, so it's more like a 3.5-hour, but I don't also have to edit it all in one sitting, so this is still nicer.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'm going to get this wrapped up. I'm going to get the recording files dealt with and stuff, but otherwise, I think that came out hell of clean. It's going to be a super easy edit. I think we had good energy.
Oh, good.
I mean, let me restate. I think your energy has been slightly low, but I still think it was a
rude
good
episode. Ah, rude bitch. I've told you I'm sick.
I know. That's why I didn't say anything. And I initially said we had great energy. But then when you were like, we did with like a question mark, I'm like, well, if you're going to make me be fully full, shit.
No, I said we did. I said we did, period.
Okay. I thought you said we did, question mark. Then let me just say, yeah, bitch, we did. And then that's a celebratory statement.
We did?
Yeah, bitch, we did.
Did we?
Yeah, bitch, we did. I'm glad the Craigs are still recording. I'll probably use some of that.
Yeah.
And in fact, that is actually a pretty good example of the good energy we have. I think this is going to edit into a good episode. I am delighted because everything, all of my goals attained. Very happy.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
Now recording.
Happy Father's Day.
Ah, it's Mother's Day, you nasty slut.
Not for me.
You're about to be mommy.
Oh. Oh, good.
All right. That sounds good. Oh, how are you feeling today?
I'm okay.
Okay, good. Well, make sure you stay nice and hydrated. Yeah. Take care of yourself and stuff.
I had like an airborne drink pouch thing so that my throat wouldn't be all gross. So good I don't expect it should impact the quality of the show. Only my flatulence.
Ah! Hi, buddy. Welcome to the Game Movie Network Video Game Podcast. The first time we put a coffee, we just visit the major winner, but also we should be.
All right.
Oh, good. I added the Lincoln.
Oh, my God. You added Abe Lincoln?
Yeah. First gay president.
That's a toot, hunty.
Oh, good. So we have Oh, good. For some reason, my Google Docs reloaded. That's probably why it shows an anonymous tiger. Oh, good.